Welcome back, everyone. I hope however you spent that time was nurturing and of benefit. And as I said earlier, we'll just move right into the sit. So as we did before, I'll ask you again to close your eyes. Again, screen on, screen off, whatever is better. And to allow your body to come into a posture that allows you to feel upright and alert. And this may be sitting, it may be lying down, it's more the energetics of allowing ourselves to drop into, excuse me, these teachings, which are ennobling. Yeah, so we take our seats as daughters of the Buddha, sitting in circle. I like to think as women have always done, not quite in this form, but certainly the gathering of women together feels essential. So in these early moments of the sit, to allow yourself in your mind's eye, if it's helpful, to take your place in the circle of women. Our Sangha sisters who are here today, our Sangha sisters who are not. The circle will always hold you, whether you are here physically present or not. Just again, allowing yourself to feel into what I hope is a sense of belonging in the circle. Again, the sense of uprightness and alertness in the body. As we move into the sitting meditation, for our anchor this morning, this afternoon, this evening, I'd like us to again just arrive in the body. If it's helpful, just to check in again with the sit bones on the seat, the cushion, the chair, the couch, the bed, the floor, whatever you are resting upon, inviting the mind's energies down into the body. Feeling into the earth element, as I mentioned before, that is supporting us, but also within relative stillness of the bones. Can we take these early moments just to rest in the bones, allowing these bones to rest upon the earth as a way of anchoring ourselves in the body. And for the object of our attention, I'm going to invite us, maybe keep 40-50% of our attention in the body. And allowing the rest to watch the mind. Again, with this gentle curiosity of big sky mind. You know, the mind like the blue sky or the vast expanse of ocean. And then these thoughts that come in like clouds, some are puffy or horsetails and beautiful, some are stormy and not so beautiful. But can we hold on to the expansiveness of the blue sky mind in allowing these thought clouds as they come and go? If water is a more helpful image, if we think of, we're standing on the beach, we look out towards the horizon, in the waves that move on the surface of the ocean. Okay, my thoughts. Yeah. So anchoring ourselves in the body and then allowing the attention, wide angle lens as it were, just to watch the movement of the mind, the thoughts that come in. Sometimes it's the same thought or replaying the same conversation, saying the same things to ourselves. Okay, or we're trying to figure something out, making lists, fantasizing, planning. Okay, just noticing, again, this positioning of, oh, in this moment, the mind, the thought streams, these clouds are like this. We don't need to change it. We don't need to corral them. We don't need anything to be different. we're cultivating our ability both to stay connected in the body, anchored in the earth element, and then watching again with this wide angle lens. Oh, thoughts come and go. Some stick around. Some are interesting. Some are really boring and repetitive. Some are totally random. It's like this flotsam and jetsam of the mind. Okay. Can we just watch it? Yeah. Sometimes we will be sucked in. We'll be seductive. And oh, I need to figure this out. Okay. And then coming back. Oh, yeah. Anchor in the body. And then just noticing. In this moment, the energies of the mind are like this. The thought / cloud pattern is like this. Okay. Again, it may be pleasant, unpleasant. Okay. Again, can we keep that spacious awareness of the blue sky, expanse of the ocean's horizon? Okay. It's just like this. Please remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, we see what happens. And then as best we can, in one moment or in the next, we can meet ourselves again with this gentle curiosity. Oh, it's just like this. Thank you for ringing the bell. It's always so lovely to sit together. Always a little bit of a temptation, like, let's just sit the whole time. But I will never do that by surprise. So thank you again for being here. And today I wanted to play around in the field, as it were, of a little bit of equanimity. Let's just say mostly equanimity, but with a particular flavor. And I came across this sweet little book that I've had by Ajahn Amaro. And for those of you who've been around Spirit Rock for quite some time, they remember Ajahn Amaro is one of our lineage holders. He used to be up at Abayagiri in Northern California and would come down to the Bay Area once or twice a month. And he is now, I believe, in England with Ajahn Sumedho, who is also one of our lineage holders here at Spirit Rock. And he has a sweet book, little books, on the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes. And his book on equanimity is entitled Who's Pulling the Strings? And what I love about this little pithy book is this placement of our human experience in the family of things. So I want to read Wild Geese by Mary Oliver, just to sort of set the tone, as it were. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your soft animal body, oh my goodness. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. And oh my, do I love that poem. And it's certainly one of those, it certainly gets read quite a bit in the Dharma world. But this taking our place in the family of things, allowing ourselves to be a part of the family of things. And in Ajahn Amaro's book, in this pithy book, he speaks about, it's not just the natural world among the trees and the animals and the buildings, but more we are taking our place in the natural laws that govern the universe. And the five laws, the five nimiyas, laws of nature, he spells them out. The first one is called Uta Nimiya, which means the weather or the temperature, the seasons and other physical events. So it's basically this body of ours, our lives, are susceptible to the laws of physics and chemistry. When we talk about what we experience, we don't always take into account or appreciate the fact that we have a physical body, that this is a physical universe, and we experience the results of the way matter works, the configuration of the material world, and how the laws, the physical laws operate, of which we are a part. So this thread that I speak about quite often is that we are a part of this natural world, beginning with, you know, feeling into the earth element, that we are not separate. We are a part of the world around us. We are subject to the same laws, right? The laws of physics and chemistry, the laws of biology. That's the second law, the laws of biology. Bija literally means seed. So as human beings, we are subject to the laws of biology and genetics. We have a human body. We need to breathe. We need to eat. We exist as part of a social group. We may think that these aspects of our lives are ordinary, unremarkable, but it's a huge part of who and what we are is determined by the laws of physics, chemistry, and biology. We are a part of, not a part. We are all in the mix with everything else that is susceptible to these laws, right? Gravity affects us as it affects other things. We don't find that remarkable, but it's a part of this way in which we move in the world. It's not news, he says. They don't make the headlines. That keeps everybody breathing, but we are able to breathe, right? It's the individual. So the third law is karma, laws of actions and result. And this tends to get a lot of our attention, right? It's what I do, what I want, what do I aspire to? He writes, the individual actions to take that gets our attention. The laws the way our personal choices function and it affects the choices we have. The karma refers to the laws that govern the way effects take shape as a result of the choices we have made. And again, this tends to get a lot of our attention, or other people's actions tend to get a lot of our attention. And certainly, and there's this somebody like, if we can imagine it, then we can make it happen, which is, I'm a big adherent of wanting to imagine it, but there are a lot of other forces that intervene as to whether or not that's actually going to happen and how we can live. I think this is fair to say that in the dominant culture, there's kind of a belief like you can do it. You know, the American ethos of pick yourself up by your bootstraps and make it happen. Well, yes, there's an aspect of what we can determine in our individual lives. We can orient ourselves on a particular path. Things intervene, right? How many of us actually are living exactly the life that we want to be living? Maybe, but things happen, right? Because we are susceptible to the laws that are around us, physics, chemistry, biology, right? But this way that we can focus on, well, I'm determined, you know, I'm master of the universe, you know, or whatever that law is from Dead Poets Society. Master of our own ship. Yeah, these ideas can be helpful to a degree, but they're not the be all and end all. We can certainly have the aspiration. We can set our orientation towards the North Star, and then we see what happens. I often share this line about the space shuttle back in the day when it would go from the Earth to the International Space Station. I heard that it was 95% of the time off course. So it had a direction, but it went this way. It didn't go straight. And that's kind of how our lives go when we allow it, right? And we can get so harsh with ourselves when things don't work out, as if it's my fault or I'm going to blame somebody else that it didn't work out. And there are our own actions, of course, our actions have consequences. Yes. But again, that's not all of it. It's not the totality of when we take our place in the family of things, our actions, our will, it's just a piece. The other laws, the fourth law, is called the law of psychology, how the mind works, how we think, the way memory works, how a thought moment takes shape, the speed of thinking, the way emotions work. In short, the laws of mental activity in the whole of the psychological realm. These laws of the mental realm function in the same way as the laws of physics, chemistry, and biology. And all these laws interrelate with each other. We feel, we think, we remember, and we plan in certain ways and according to certain patterns, because that's part of the natural system. That's the way the mind works. And I love this for so many reasons. One, because it depersonalizes it. Like, okay, this is the way the mind works. We talk about that week after week. Yeah, the mind works like this. Sometimes it's like, oh my God, I can't believe the mind works this way, because it can cause so much suffering. So we undertake the practice to learn, okay, how can I work with this mind of mine to be able to orient more towards patterns that allow me to have more ease, more these think thoughts can lead me into more place of ease, of beneficial mind states as opposed to stress. But again, coming back to be able to notice, oh, this is the way the mind works. This is the orientation of the mind. Yeah. This too is a law that we are subject to. Again, what I love about this is, and why I think it's helpful, is it can help depersonalize. Oh, this is just how it is. I can make choices of how I relate to the different laws, how those laws impact my life, how I respond to that. That's really the limit of what I can control. Is my response. I can hope to affect other things that may or may not work out. I can absolutely strive to work with my reactivity or my responsiveness to the ways in which these different laws impact my life and the lives of those I love, the world around me, and those I don't know but still care about. The fifth law is the overarching and all-encompassing Dhamma Nimiya, the fundamental law of reality, encompassing the full physical and mental spectrum and beyond what is describable. So the relationship between the conditioned reality and the unconditioned reality, or the relative reality and the absolute. And this definitely gets very big picture, but that this too influences and impacts our life. It means the laws of how the realms of form, time, space, and mind all operate, including unconditioned, unborn, unoriginated, uncreated, timeless, and formless, the all-encompassing, all-embracing laws of reality at its most fundamental level, the integration of the reality of the way things are. And again, this is going big, right? It's more at play at the universal. So it's the micro levels, how biology and chemistry are going to impact this body, and then going all the way out to include the absolute and unconditioned reality. And I don't want to get too involved there, one, because there are other people that are much more knowledgeable about speaking about that from there. But what is helpful, again, is this range.
Yeah.
And coming out of our own personal life and how we can swirl around on me and mine and what do I want and how do I feel better? How do I get what I want? To notice, okay, that's a habit pattern of the mind. Okay, that's how the mind can work. And yet we are but a piece in this larger scheme. Right. And the large scheme goes really, really big. At any moment, all five of these laws are operating simultaneously. So what we experience right now is not just the result of our personal actions. Right. There are all these other forces. And again, by placing ourselves in the family of things, it's not just in the natural, but there are all these other laws as well. I will often start my day. I've read this before, but I think it's useful as a thread of understanding kind of our place in the family of things, which are the five recollections. I am of the nature to grow old. There's no way of escaping growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There's no way to escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There's no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground upon which I stand. And kind of allowing these both statements of one, that our individual actions do not determine everything in our lives, the course of it, but they do determine the ground upon which I stand. Like another line is, I am the inheritor of my karma, my actions. What I put out in the world through my thoughts, actions, words, deeds have an impact on me and others around me. That's what's under my actions are under the locus of my control. Not much else is. So how do we work within? These are the laws that we move through and with and are buffeted by. And the equanimity piece comes in of, okay, well, these laws are true. And this body's of the nature to grow old, to grow sick, and I'm going to lose everything I'm attached to. And my actions are my only true inheritance. Okay. So if those are givens, then how can we respond to things that will inevitably not go the way we want them to go? Again, forgive me, I've read this before, but I do love it. Jane Kenyon's Otherwise. I got out of bed on two strong legs. It might have been otherwise. I ate cereal, sweet milk, ripe, flawless peach. It might have been otherwise. I took the dog uphill to the birchwood all morning. I did the work I loved. At noon, I lay down with my mate. It might have been otherwise. We ate dinner together at a table with silver candlesticks. It might have been otherwise. I slept in a bed in a room with paintings on the wall and planned another day, just like this day. But one day, I know it will be otherwise. That's how our life goes. We're not really told that when we're young. It can be this idea of we have this idea, and if we work hard enough, that we'll get it. This can be a sort of a mythos again of the dominant culture, but it doesn't always work out that way. We can have moments of like, okay, all the balls of my life are in the air. This is great. And inevitably some fall and break. One day it will be otherwise. And we know this to be true, and we can fight and we can resist. Who's to blame? Someone's to blame. It's my fault. It's somebody else's fault. Or we can allow ourselves to be in the place of, oh, there are other laws, other forces acting upon my life and the lives of others that I can't necessarily see, that may not actually be tangible, but there are forces at play much greater than my own will. Okay. Can I align myself with this truth as a way of gaining the strength to be able to meet what comes with a sense of, oh, okay, it's like this. You know, when the body doesn't feel well, I was a mess 2 weeks ago. Okay. All right. How do I deal with this? And for each of us, we have times again where things are going well. And the times that they're not, I've shared the story before, but back in the day, pre-COVID, I was a day long with some of the nuns from Aloka Vihara. And a yogi asked a question about basically saying, I'm doing everything that I think is right. I'm practicing, I'm meditating a couple hours a day. I'm practicing yoga. I'm eating all the greens, taking care of myself, but things aren't working out. And one of the nuns just responded, why do you think it should? It was such a great moment of, oh, you know, and I remember reading, I think it's Ajahn Sucitto saying, I mean, he's dedicated his life to the practice. And him being like, there's not, I'm going to misquote him, but the sentiment of just because I'm in robes and I've dedicated my life to this practice, I have no belief that things will work out the way I want them to. Which I think, and as I say, it's like, well, obviously, but there's something that's so beautifully humbling about that of, oh, right. We are subject to the laws of the natural world, these five laws enumerated by Ajahn Amaro. Okay, regardless of our good intentions and how much kale we eat, we are going to get sick. Bad things will happen. And even that phrasing right there is problematic because it sort of sets up a good and a bad. And if we align ourselves properly, then good things should happen. And for some of us, it does. For a time. Right? I know for myself, I came to the Dharma when my life was this so hard. I did not come because everything was great, you know, and I think that's true for many of us. It's like, please tell me there's another way to relate to what's happening. And the Buddha's like, well, yeah, there totally is. There's a way to be able to find a place of equanimity and ease to say, it's just like this. One of my favorite lines in this little book is, the Buddha's advice is for us to exchange trying to find happiness through getting what we like for learning how to find happiness through liking what we get, or at least not finding fault with it. So great. The advice is to exchange trying to find happiness through getting what we like, which we know will either not happen or it will end, right? We'll have it and then we'll lose it. Rather, for learning how to find happiness through liking what we get, or at least not finding fault with it, not fighting against. So allowing the ground of equanimity to support us and saying, oh, it's like this. And it will likely change, even if it's subtly, right? And thinking about the holidays in the States, many of us celebrating Thanksgiving meant either coming together with family, which can be wonderful or problematic, or not coming together with family, which can be wonderful or problematic. And this way that as in this season of holidays and coming together, it can be stressful for many of us. And this way of, it can also bring up the question of like a sense of loss. If we didn't maybe have the family of origin that we wish we had, or we haven't created the family that we wish we could, we had it and we lost it, right? These are the conditions that we're in. And in this time where it's kind of the volume is turned up a little bit more on, for some of us, of how our relationships are and a sense of they may not be what we want them to be. And then we can beat ourselves up for it or we get mad at other people. And it's how do we use that energy to be like, oh, this is hard, right? Pleasant, unpleasant. These are the conditions as they are now. And some of us have that experience of like, oh, this is what I wanted to create. And we know it will change. You know, that's the law. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There's no way to escape being separated from that which we love. That's a given. It's not our fault. So really sort of just trying to keep underscoring this. How can we allow ourselves to find a sense of ease, or at least not fighting against how things are, when we allow ourselves to place ourselves and this vast family of things upon which the laws of nature act, right? In conjunction with each other, in opposition to each other. There's our sense of will and what we want. And then there's all of these other things that come in to say, maybe not now. Yes, it's here. And then it's gone. All that we love, we will be separated from. this is a law, right? And how do we step back from the fight? So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And just to take a moment and just sort of kind of just check in with where you are, how you are relating to the conditions of your life just now, whether it's literally today, this day, this evening, this morning, or this stage of life that you're in. You know, one thing I so love about this group is that we have a lot of different ages here, a lot of different stages of life, different life experiences. And just to sort of float that question, well, how am I relating to what's happening? Whether it's in respect to our health, our relationships, work, finances. Is there something we're fighting? It shouldn't be this way. You know, I wish it were otherwise. And such an easy, reasonable, natural way for the mind to go. I don't like this. I wish it were otherwise. Okay. And the question here is more, hey, check that out. Where and in response to what does that response come in? If at all. And if it does come up, what happens if you let yourself sit down firmly on this ground of equanimity that I've been talking about, to open up to, oh, it's like this. I am subject to these five laws of biology and physics and psychology, of human will, the laws of karma, the forces of the material and physical world, the laws that this body will get sick and age and die. Can I make space for, oh, sweetheart, in this moment, it's just like this. Can I put down the fight against how it is? Even if it's just momentary, can we allow ourselves to drop into, oh, it's just like this. It may be pleasant, it may be unpleasant. Can we release the energy required of fighting against how things are to be used in a way that is more nurturing and more of service? To channel that energy of fighting against how things are, perhaps to move into the place of that self-compassion of, ooh, this is hard. Sweetie, this is hard right now. Okay. How can we allow ourselves to gentle ourselves into the moment? Again, that may be pleasant, unpleasant. But can we find happiness in being able to relate to the way things are from a place of balance and understanding? Oh, these are the laws that my life are impacted by, much of which is out of my control. So can we hold on to this one precious life that is subject to all these laws and try to meet each moment with as much kindness, clarity, wisdom, generosity as possible? Stop there and invite you to open your eyes. Thank you for your kind attention.